Right, good morning. Any questions so far?
Possibly a stupid question, but is there a fourth homework assignment that I'm missing, or did we just not get one yet?
There is one in your future.
Okay.
No, I have it almost ready, but I thought I should read through once more, and I didn't get to do it this morning. Yesterday I had two defenses as external members, so I wasted much time. If you do a defense, don't go more than 45 minutes. Anyhow.
I have one question. You're talking about the Hurwitz group, which was the quotients of that certain group.
Yeah.
Is there some big reason why it's here? I mean, it must be geometric, but I was trying to look up things about that.
There is some geometric reason that it is, but it's not completely obvious, and I don't remember by heart. There is a geometric reason that it's a certain covering space that you get. This is that these groups can arise as automorphisms of coverings of a certain space. Yes.
Yeah, I saw something about that the monster was a Hurwitz group.
Yes.
Which is pretty wild.
Yes. And that actually, the group for showing that something is a Hurwitz group, the only thing you need to do is you need to find an element of order 2, an element of order 3, which together generate the group, and their product is order 7.
Right.
Okay. So, in principle, trying this out, if your group is not large, that's not that horribly hard. The trick with a monster, or the achievement there, is that this group is just so horribly big. This group has order 10 to the 55, I think, and the smallest way you can represent it, you can represent it by a presentation which is relatively small, but there you don't have a normal form. You can't test easily for equality of elements. So that's a matrix representation. And that is in dimension over the field with two elements in dimension 196,000 something. And that representation actually, if you now calculate just what it would take you to write down matrices for the generators, that takes a lot of memory. So actually, the matrices are not written out. There are two procedures. And these procedures act like the matrices on vectors. So these procedures get fed a vector in dimension 196,000 and give you, as a result, the image of this vector under the matrix. And so what you do is what basically this proof for the monster being a Hurwitz group, what the calculation did was to run through many elements, but never write them out as matrices, but keep them as word and generators. And you calculate the order by taking sufficiently many vectors and tracing them through the product of these matrices. Image under the one, image under the other, and so forth, and seeing are they mapped to themselves. And if you, in the extreme case, if you would do it for a full basis, and in fact you don't need a full basis, you could show that there are two particular vectors which are sufficient, then it works. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, because if you're talking about matrix, that's essentially what a matrix group is. A matrix is, it's just defined.
Yes. It's just, if you have matrices, normally you can multiply them and have again a matrix. And you can't do that with a procedure. Well, you could try to think about how do you write a procedure which does both, but that gets very quickly very complicated. And the achievement there, I remember that these matrices were procedures that he created in around 97 or 98, and they initially, the question was, can you do anything with it? And there was at a conference in 97, Rob Wilson, who did this, mentioned, that might be the one thing which is doable to test, is it a Hurwitz group? And at that point his estimate was this would take 100 years, and in the end, actually, with improvements on what you only need to do and improvements on the computers, I think it took a year or two of computer time to do this. not a result of imminent practical relevance.
I wasn't sure if, like, you know, by doing that, like, you know a lot about her with groups in some way, and then you can say something about it, that would maybe...
You can say something, and they even have the monster is even there. I think it is known that there... I would expect there will be infinitely many simple groups which are... Yeah, that must be possible to get some serious there, infinitely many, but... Yeah.
Okay. Just curious.
Cool. Thank you. Okay. So homework will come on Thursday, and graded homework will also come back on Thursday. Next week and the week after, I'm in Costa Rica giving a lecture series there. I thought probably no one is horribly sad at this time in the semester if I don't get a substitute who will try to struggle through badly written notes. And this is a 600 level class, so there will be, there won't be class the next 2 weeks, and we ran over a few times, so in some way I think this will, in the very worst case, if I don't finish on something well, I might try to see whether we can find an hour in final week or so just to finish it, the topic we are on. Anyhow, so in the homework, this is this time therefore a little bit longer, and there are some problems which are basically suggested to be done with a computer. Okay, the reason for this is simply with the finitely presented groups, if you want to do something with examples, they very quickly get messy because you need to write down words and generators and to try things out. We will see something, well, probably starting later today and on Thursday, something which is called coset enumeration, which is one of the default methods for investigating it, but it really is something which by hand becomes very quickly very, very complicated. I mean, is like multiplying out tons of permutations or so. It's not a deep process, but it's something which takes time. And so the computer is an obvious tool for investigating this. And indeed, that process has been one of the first algebraic algorithms which has been implemented on computers in the early 1950s, when computers became available to people outside the military or specialist organizations, and they were in some way sufficiently general purpose, not just some machines which only could solve differential equations numerically or so. That procedure was done. Anyhow, so what I thought I'll start with is to show you briefly in GAP how one can create finitely presented groups and some of the things which one can do with it. You don't need to know the details of what the algorithms do internally, but I thought, yeah, that might help. And GAP should be installed on the machines here. On the Windows machine, there is an icon you can click on. The Unix machines, it's probably user local GAP or something. Okay, so let me log in. Oh, okay. Oh, that is stupid. That wasn't this keyboard. Oh, okay, now it is connected. Okay. No. Stupid thing. Sorry. So, okay, now build something. Why on earth doesn't this?
Is it only work on the iPad, like touchpad, maybe?
I mean, it should. The keyboard is on, and this says Bluetooth is on, and it moved its keyboard away. Let me try once more. Okay, so that that does something. Okay, so the keyboard definitely works. Let me see, it might have been to start the, close the app. Okay, right. No. Okay, then let's, if you don't want this, let's see whether it works. Okay. Sorry. Well, okay, that of course is the, that might do it. Right, so, okay, so I want to log into my machine. Let me see whether that now does something if I now turn it on. Because this keyboard is really awful to work on. One thing, well, I can show you this. This is actually a... Okay, Bluetooth isn't yet on. Why isn't this is on? Why?
Was it connected to a different computer before?
No, 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 this was connected here, and I mean it had... And it worked just fine here. Okay, now it says it has Bluetooth. And if I'm going back here. Okay, now for summer. Okay, now it seems to be doing something. Okay, no idea why it didn't want to do so before. Okay. Well, if it works, it's really fancy. It's just until you get it working. Okay, sorry. Right, so this is just locked. Why doesn't it want it to do it now? No. Why, please, doesn't it? Okay, that works perfectly fine. Why doesn't this stupid SSH? So let me close it. Okay. Okay, I'll try it once more, and if not, then I'll do it on paper and show it to you on Thursday, sorry. This seemed to be... And I've done this before, but the app updated in the meantime. So I have no idea. It shows here it is Bluetooth connected. And I have no idea. It doesn't even give me the option to have a... Closing this, and I'm opening it fresh. No, I have no idea why this doesn't like, and to type it on here because I need some control keys. That's stupid. Sorry. Sorry, that was overall a thorough failure. Okay. No, I don't want to do that. No. Okay. Right. Okay, sorry. So this is, if you're, it's about 15 minutes in the audio. I apologize for wasting your time with this. I have no idea why this keyboard and the app don't want to talk to each other. Okay, so yeah, I'll prepare these as examples for Thursday. Basically, what then the next topic which would come is to look at what can we actually do if we have a finitely presented group. We can find out that certain groups are quotients. We can test that. But is there some mechanism which can tell us that a group can't be larger? Or that something that we say the group is at most of that size. Okay. The examples you've seen are examples of normal forms. And if you have this, that's great. But in general, you can't hope to have a normal form. So there is a different process. And this different process is called coset enumeration, or the Todd Coxeter process. So, I guess we had already paragraph 2, so this would be paragraph 3. This is coset enumeration. So what we have is, we are given a finitely presented group G, which is generated by elements G1 up to Gn, say, and we have a subgroup H of G, and we have this subgroup given by generators. H is generated by elements H1 up to Hm, and each Hi is given as a word in the G of J. Each Hj is given as a word in these generators Gi. So that's the generic process. I have a subgroup given by generators, and what I'm asking is, the question is, can we find the index of H in G, or can we find permutations for the action of G on the cosets? Okay. H could be the trivial group that I have no generator at all. So this index would be calculation then of the order of G. Okay. And the idea, and this is due to Todd and Coxeter, was proposed in the 1930s, before computers. This was initially proposed as something on paper, and what I'm going to show you is the method, basically how it works on paper, but you'll see very quickly you really don't want to do this on paper for things which get larger. And the idea is, yes, can we enumerate the cosets? Can we describe what the cosets of H in G are. I think it's 1936 where this was proposed. The cosets of H in G, and I describe them by giving representatives. So my cosets are the coset H with the identity. I could have the coset HA, I could have the coset HB, HAB, and so forth. Well, at some point this process has to stop when the subgroup has finite index. And basically what needs to happen, at some point, cosets are the same. So I have that H somewhere W1 in the G is the coset H W2 in the G. At some point, if we have finite index. I mean, if we have infinite index, there are infinitely many cosets, we can't hope to have a procedure which ever terminates. And that, of course, means that W1 inverse G times W2 G lies in H. Okay, and that can be caused by two reasons. Well, there are two options. The one option is actually this is something, or in some way it could be a mixture of the two reasons. This actually lies in the subgroup. I can write this in the HIs. Well, let's give it a name so I don't need to write it again and again. Let's call this Q for quotient. This product of the HJ, or write Q as product of conjugates of relators. I have a finitely presented group. So far I didn't yet talk about the relators at all. As product of conjugates . Okay. Well, if I have a conjugate of a relator, basically that conjugate means I'm taking some elements first, then take the relator, and then take the inverse of these elements. And what I want to do is essentially to trace through relators on cosets. So I will have a coset H with some represent, let's say I start with H itself. If I apply a relator, that relator is the identity, so I need to get H itself. And if I have a conjugate of a relator, I can take this conjugating element, or the inverse of the conjugating element, as representative of the coset. And then basically saying the conjugate of the relator is the identity says not just H times this relator is H, but any coset times this relator is the same coset. So what I'm doing here is conjugates means that H C times relator times C inverse is H, or I can write this equivalently as HCR is equal to HC. So any coset is mapped under the relator to the coset itself. That takes care of the conjugates. Okay. And what I'm now doing systematically is basically looking at such images. Okay, and I think first, before trying to justify why it works, I should explain what we are actually doing there. So, We have will have three tables. The main one is what is called the coset table. The coset table has as rows the cosets, and as columns the generators and their inverses. And the inverses you could do, well, then some bit. In general, you need to deal with the inverses as well. Sometimes you could get around it. So the columns are the generators and inverses. So, the cosets are given just because I need to have some label. The cosets are given numbers. That's why it's enumeration. Okay, and so what are the entries of the table? The entry, if I take row I and the column for the generator inverse G, this is saying that coset I under G is coset J, so the entry, this entry has entry J. So in the coset table, I'm writing down, okay, I have coset I here, column for some generator, I write down number J, and that should tell me that coset I, with whatever representative I have, under the generator G is coset number J. The cosets must be commuted. So, what I actually have is the columns, if the coset table is full, the columns of the coset table are simply the permutations on the cosets. Columns of the coset table, if it is full, are the permutations or the permutation images, of generators when acting on cosets. Okay, so for example, if I take G is the group, take the group, symmetric group S3, generated by A and B, A squared and B cubed are 1, and A, B, A is B inverse. And let's take a subgroup H, the subgroup, let's take the subgroup generated by A, right? So this subgroup we know already has order 6, this subgroup will have order 2, so I will have 3 cosets. So my cosets could be the coset H itself, it could be HB, and it could be HB square. Okay, so how would this coset table look like? The cosets are given numbers. That is 1, 2, 3. So I have 1, 2, 3. The identity is always number, or the subgroup itself is always number 1. Okay, and I have the generators A, and I would have A inverse, B, B inverse. And the full table would have as entries, okay, what does A do with a coset H that is mapped to itself because A lies in the subgroup? The same with A inverse. The H under B, HB is coset number 2. So, and coset number 2 is HB. HB times B is HB squared, so I get a 3 here. HB squared times B is HB cubed, but B cubed is the identity, so I get a 1 here. For the inverses, I get exactly the opposite, so I get a 2.
This should be a 3.
2, 1. 1 has to be here. 2.
Because B inverse is like
so,
B squared.
So, sorry, here I need to have a 1, right? There I need to have a 1. 1 under B inverse is 3, and that is 2. Yeah. Okay, and now I just need to see what would happen here. Basically, A needs to do something. So if A can't map 2 to 1, because 1 already is image of something. If A also would map 2 to 2, and then it would have to map 3 to 3, and the permutation image would be trivial. That does not work. So this needs to be a 3, this needs to be a 2, and because A and A inverse really are the same, that would be the cosetting. And now you can just read off as columns. The columns are permutations given as lists of images, right? This is the permutation which maps 1 to 1, 2 to 3, 3 to 2, and this is the permutation which maps 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 1. Okay. So this filled out would be the coset, would be a coset table for this case. Okay. Of course, here I used some further information about the group to tell me what the coset table is. So what the coset enumeration does is basically it starts with an empty table and starts filling it out and starts to deduce things, to deduce information that certain things have to be the same, and hopes to fill out this table completely. Okay. But basically, what it does is it only makes deductions when it can make the deductions based on relators or on generators. So what we are doing is we initially simply give numbers to new cosets, and we might define more cosets than there really are. And at some point, we expect, if it has finite index, then what has to happen is that certain cosets have to coincide. Anyhow, so we start essentially filling this out by putting numbers in 1, 2, generically we would pin 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and so forth. We define them, and in a free group, that really would be the case. Okay. So that is what the coset table does, or what the coset table aims for. In the end, the result I only care is really this coset table. The other two kinds of tables are auxiliary. Okay, what are the other two tables? They basically, one of them deals with relators, and one of them deals with subgroup generators. Okay. So, next I have relator tables. What are the relator tables? I have one per relator. The rows are again the cosets. Indeed, the rows of each of these tables are the cosets. Okay, and now actually I label the columns, or I label the transition of columns with the letters of a relator. So, column transitions are labeled with letters of the relator. So what would I do in my example here? I have one relator, A squared is 1, right? So I would have A and A again, and that is the identity. Okay. And what I know is because this is the identity, A square is the identity, it needs to map every coset to itself. Right? That was the observation I had here. So I know that the first and last entry must be the same. Okay. And what I'm going to do is, if I know what an image is, I copy in the image from the coset table. So instead of keeping this table, I basically could trace through relators in the coset table. And that's indeed what an algorithmic implementation does. It doesn't keep these tables. It traces through. This is just a tool for tracing. So we fill this out. Fill out if image of 1 under A is defined in the coset table. So similarly, we have the relator. We could, for example, pick the relator AB, AB, right? So I would, and I would have BQ. So I would have AB, AB. Okay, what happens with coset 1? Now if I, since I have the full coset table, I could fill this out. So 1 under A is 1, 1 under B is 2, 2 under A is 3, 3 under B is 1. And I know that that has to be 1. Okay? But I'm filling, what I'm now doing is I'm filling this out dynamically. Whenever I have some new number given here, I do this and I fill out any consequence in any of the relator tables which I get. Okay. And similarly, with images under generators, I can go forward. With images under inverses, I could go backward. Okay. And these are finite rows. So at some point, when I will write a last number in a row, and when I write a last number in a row, there is one step which is basically a consequence. And that consequence will give me new information based on that relator. And I will use that information for my coset table. And that brings in the information of the relators. Okay.
That specifically you're talking about, once you get to, you know, one goes eventually set 3, then you know that B must be 3 to 1.
Yeah, so what I could do, for example, is that I say, depending how I would, assume I wouldn't know this yet, assume I had partially the coset table, I wouldn't yet have dealt with the B's. I would have dealt here that I said, okay, image of A, let's say I have this, image of 2 under A is 3, and image of 3 under A is 2. Okay. And I had known that the image of 1 under B was also 2. Let's say I had this. Okay. Once I define that the image of 2 under A is 3, so let's say I didn't even yet have these numbers here. I had these three numbers filled out, and now I say, for whatever reason, I would fill in a 3 here. I would write the 3 there. I would observe that that must imply that the image of 3 under B must be 1.
Okay.
So if I have these numbers with that relator, this 1 becomes a consequence of these other numbers. Okay. This is because it's a dynamic process. It's a bit complicated to describe. And if you describe it formally, you end again up in a mess of indices. And really, what one needs to do is basically needs is to see an example where one goes through that. through that work. Okay. So I do these tables for each of the relators. And I do subgroup tables. I do tables for each subgroup generators. Well, and there I just have one row. And why do I have only one row? Because that row is, I only know that H times an element in this, times a subgroup generator has to be H. I don't know anything about images of under other cosets under the subgroup generator. Okay, so let's maybe do this in this small baby example. I think that that should fit in the last 10 minutes from the start. So that's my, so in the end I will end up with this table. So in the example, I take, so my coset table has, no, I have at least one coset. I have A inverse, B inverse, and I have relator tables for three relators. Here I have the relator A square. I have the relator B cube. And I have the relator AB, AB. And I have one subgroup generator, the subgroup generator A. Okay, right, so now I start filling out this table systematically. And I know this is, will be slightly disappointing in the end in your notes because you will see just the filled out table. You don't see the end-to-end dynamic process. So I know the subgroup table, I for the relator tables and the coset tables, the entry in the first and at start and end always has to be the same. So from this I can immediately deduce that the image of 1 under A has to be 1. Right? I could, otherwise I would put a 2 in here, but I can deduce immediately, oh, that has to be a 1. So I can deduce that this image is 1 here. Okay. If 1 under A is 1, 1 under A inverse is also 1, right? If I have X under A is Y, I know that Y under A inverse is X. So I can always fill in two numbers at the same time, the one image under a generator and the corresponding image under the inverse. So I can fill in the 1 here and I can fill in the 1 there. Okay. And I know, just go through systematically, 1 under A is 1. Well, that doesn't give me anything new here. And I know 1 under A is 1. And otherwise, I can't find any further images, so I don't put in any other numbers. So, I have done all I can fill out so far, all images I know so far. So, I need to take another image for a leg. Because I can't deduce anything more, I pick a new number, I pick the number 2. So I also have a coset 2 here. In the subgroup table, I'm not looking at any coset but 1. Okay. And I know, because 1 under B is 2, that 2 under B inverse has to be 1. I can put that in automatically because I have a group. Okay. What else can I do? 1 under B is 2. I don't know anything with 2 and A. I don't know anything with 1 and B inverse. Or, well, I know 2 under B inverse was 1. So I need to have a 1 here, right? And 1 under A inverse is also 1. So I need to have a 1 here. But we don't know what is mapped under B to 1, so, or 2 under A, so I can't yet fill that in here. Okay? Yeah, I don't know 2A. Well, here I know 2 under, 1 under B is 2. What is mapped? 2 under B inverse is 1. I don't know what 1 is under B inverse. I don't know what 2 is under B. So I think that's all I can fill in at this point. Okay. And now I need to pick. So I pick the next number. And essentially what people do is that you either go through systematically through this table, or you try to give your definition serendipitously, trying to hope to fill in rows. These are two different strategies. The filling in rows in some way looks often to get you quicker to a result, but if you do it systematically, one can prove statements better. Anyhow, so let's say we would define this as 3. Simply, it's the next number, right? So I also have 3 here. Okay, now, if I have 3 here, I know that 3 under B is 1. Okay, so let's put in consequences. I defined 1 under B inverse is 3. So 1 under B inverse is 3. Right? 3 under B must be 1. Okay. And now I'm getting a consequence that is new. I'm getting this consequence here. And that is something I did not know before. So, 2 under, let's remember this for the moment. Let's just fill things in. Similarly here, I would have 1 under B inverse would be 3. So I would get again, and I get the same consequence again here. And I know 3 under B is 1. I knew this. That was here, 1 under B I knew was 2. And again, I get the consequence 2 under B is 3. So I get the same consequence 3 times. That's because of this particular shape of the relator. I could get different consequences. Similarly here, 1 under B inverse, I now know is 3. Right? Okay, so I get, well, I get again the same consequence. And it's the same because it's such a small group. 1 under B inverse is 3, so I get the same consequence here. Okay. Right. So, let's put that consequence in. My consequence is that 2 under A has to be 3. So I can put a 3 in here. 2 under A is 3, and I can similarly put in 3 under A inverse is 2. Right? Well, 2 under A is 3, so I can now put that number in the table in here. And if I do this, I get a consequence. 3 under A is 2. So 3 under A is 2, and therefore 2 under A inverse is 3. Right. So in here I would have 3 under A is, I get 2 here. Okay. But since I have this, I now can also fill things in here. 3 under A is 2. three. So the next, I would have two under B. I can't yet say what this is, or three under B inverse. No, I knew that, right?
Do we know that two goes?
No, I don't.
Two under B goes to three because of this consequence down here. Just curiosity.
Oh, yes, yes, right. So, thank you. So I have three under A goes to two, under B goes to and I didn't write that number. I should have written that number also down here. I forgot to write it. I just wrote the consequence, but I need to also record it. Right? Sorry. 2 under B goes to 3, and 3 under B inverse therefore goes to 2. Sorry, I should have done that before. And now the table is full. So I have images of all the cosets. I don't need to define any more images, because there are no. I know what the images of all the cosets are. I filled it out. This is consistent with the presentation. It's consistent in the general sense. The only special things I've done is if it follows from relators or from the subgroup generators. So this must be the coset table for the subgroup. So I have proven that this subgroup must have index 3 without knowing anything, without prior knowledge of what this group is. Okay, right, I'm more than over time. Thank you very much. So we'll do another more elaborate example of this next time.